Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Art of Cruelty, A Reckoning, by Maggie Nelson. Narrated by Tavia Gilbert. Styles of Imprisonment. One should open one's eyes and take a new look at cruelty, Friedrich Nietzsche exhorted in Beyond Good and Evil, 1886, in which Nietzsche famously attempts to lay waste to traditional notions of morality, especially those associated with Christianity. Nietzsche hoped that, in catapulting beyond the poles of good and evil, kindness and cruelty, the true energy and strength of mankind would be liberated. In art, as in life, this energy, which Nietzsche termed our will to power, would pour forth. It would dance. It would shine. The next century, with its unthinkable wars, premeditated and spontaneous genocides, rapacious exploitation of resources, environmental catastrophes, and systemic injustices of all kinds, provided ample opportunity to take this new look. Many of the century's art movements, Futurism, Dada, Surrealism, Viennese Actionism, the Black Arts Movement, and so on, made complicated contributions to this conversation, in that many artists associated with them hope to mount a forceful protest against such cruelties, while they also derived much of their inspiration, rhetoric, and strategy from a bellicose avant-garde tradition with thinkers such as Nietzsche at its root. To complicate matters further, the 20th century brought an explosion in the human capacity to create and circulate images via technological inventions such as film, television, internet, digital photography, and countless other means. Given brutality's particularly fraught relationship with representation, 20th century art that concerned itself with its depiction or activation often found itself in turbulent ethical and aesthetic waters. By now, it is something of a commonplace to say that 20th century art movements were veritably obsessed with diagnosing injustice and alienation, and prescribing various shock and awe treatments to cure us of them, a method Austrian filmmaker Michel Haneke usefully, if revoltingly, described in a 2007 interview as raping the viewer into independence. Art critic Grant Kester has described this approach more gently, calling it the orthopedic aesthetic. In short, the idea is that there's something wrong with us from the get-go, be it the mark of original sin, or, conversely, as Nietzsche would have it, adherence to the slave morality of Christianity, alienation from our labor, a fatal rift with nature, being lost in a forest of simulations, being deformed by systems such as capitalism and patriarchy, westernization, not enough westernization, or simply an epistemological lack, as Kester has put it, that requires forceful, in other words, orthopedic, intervention to correct. This premise is so ubiquitous that it allows phony wagers such as Haneke's to go largely unchallenged in both artistic and political arenas. It isn't that many serious thinkers loudly profess to believe in them anymore, but rather that the habits of thought which have accrued around them remain largely intact, even when their core has been roundly disavowed. As anarchist anthropologist David Graeber puts it in an excellent short essay, The Twilight of Vanguardism, revolutionary thinkers have been declaring the age of vanguardism over for most of a century now. Outside a handful of tiny sectarian groups, it's almost impossible to find radical intellectuals who seriously believe that their role should be to determine the correct historical analysis of the world situation so as to lead the masses along in the one true revolutionary direction. But, rather like the idea of progress to which it's obviously connected, it seems much easier to renounce the principle than to shake the accompanying habits of thought. This book attempts such a shaking. There are, of course, major trends in contemporary art that have set themselves explicitly apart from the vanguardist shock and awe strategies just described. Indeed, while writing, I have been often haunted by the fact that much, if not most, of the art surrounding me at present follows a different trajectory altogether, one that goes by the name of relational aesthetics, or conversational art, or social practice, or community-based art, or literal art, or, as Kester,